Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we are spending the hour discussing COVID and the ongoing vaccine rollout, which has been an unprecedented, massive effort. We've got some good news. According to the CDC, more than 171 million vaccines have been administered nationwide. Roughly 64 million people are now fully vaccinated. California has administered more than 21 million doses, and the state now has the lowest positivity rate in the country. Californians over age 50 are now eligible to get a vaccine. Those over 16 will be eligible starting April 15th, which is next Thursday. According to large-scale clinical trials, the Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson vaccines all have high efficacy rates. According to today's guest, infectious disease specialist Dr. Monica Gandhi, the actual risk of getting COVID after being fully vaccinated is about 0.05%, and that is during a surge when you're around a lot of people. Governor Gavin Newsom recently announced that California will begin to reopen on June 15th. But there is some concerning news. Even as the pace of vaccination has increased, federal health officials are concerned about a possible fourth surge in the upper Midwest and Northeast. In Michigan, new cases and hospitalizations have more than doubled in the last 2 weeks. Nearly half of new infections across the country are in just five states: Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Florida, and Pennsylvania. There are also concerns about a rise in cases in young people ages 10 to 19. So joining us to talk about the latest is Dr. Monica Gandhi, Professor of Medicine and Associate Division Chief of the Division of HIV, Infectious Diseases, and Global Medicine at UCSF San Francisco General Hospital. Hi, Dr. Gandhi. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, can we please start with some good news? I think we all need it. I mean, I was blown away to read about the high efficacy rates. You say that the actual risk of getting COVID after being fully vaccinated is 0.05%?
Correct. So actually, let me just use a term. There's efficacy is what happened in the clinical trials. And then our epidemiologic term is effectiveness, when we see what happens in the real world. And there have been now three studies, actually more, but three studies in the United States, that show that vaccine effectiveness, how well it works in the real world, is even better than it was in the clinical trials. It's phenomenal news. And what you just pointed to, the 0.05%, was a big study in the New England Journal that looked at the University of Texas rollout among healthcare workers. And essentially, the chance of getting COVID after you're vaccinated is what you just said, 0.00005, which is 0.005%. So it's very low. And then another study I just really need to point out is the CDC study published on March 29th in the NMWR. And I want to put that really simply. This was looking at first-line responders and healthcare workers around the country. And to put it really simply, they looked at unvaccinated people. And there were 141 infections across 1,000 unvaccinated people, and there was one across 1,000 vaccinated people. That's how effective they are in the real world.
That is so amazing. Dr. Gandhi, the other thing I think that's so important to talk about is because we've been through so much trauma in the last year. Many of us have lost loved ones. I sadly lost my cousin just a couple of months ago. And I think about if she had just had access to this vaccine.
Yes.
You know, and so it's hard to kind of accept that the vaccine is working so well. How do you think that's going to play out, given that so many of us have taken so many precautions over the past year?
I think it's a great question, and the way that I would give you an analogy in history is antiretroviral therapy for HIV. We watched people die, and then in 1996, we literally watched people rise from the dead. That's how effective antiretroviral therapy is for HIV. That was actually I was an intern in 1996, and I watched it with my very eyes. These are amazingly effective vaccines. They are life-saving. They'll get us through the pandemic. But yes, of course, we are incredibly nervous. We can't believe our luck in a way. We can't believe how incredibly effective these vaccines are. And, oh, I wish they were available, you know, at the very beginning so that no one had to die. And I'm so sorry about your cousin. And I do think, truly, that it will take us a while to get back to that question of normal, meaning are we going to hug each other? Are we going to shake hands? I'm really going to be interested to see how we start letting down our guard. Are we going to still be very nervous, want to wear our masks, even when the state and the city says and the country says we don't have to wear masks? I think some of us are going to embrace feeling secure, and some of us are going to take a while to get back to normal, and that's okay. That's exactly what happened in 1918 after the influenza pandemic. It's going to take a while.
Okay, so that's good news. The other good news is that so many people are getting vaccinated. 64 million people are fully vaccinated across the country. California has administered 21 million doses. We have the lowest positivity rate in the country, which is fantastic. Yes. And then we're going to open it up to so many more people, those over 16, starting next Thursday. So what are your thoughts about the numbers that we're seeing?
You know, in places like California, we are doing extremely well, likely because we had, unfortunately, some natural immunity from our terrible third surge. And now we're also laying down vaccines very quickly. And I think our cases are going to stay low. And I do not believe we're going to have a fourth surge in the state, like you just mentioned, in some state, other states. Texas, frankly, the same thing is going on. They had a lot of natural immunity. They're putting down vaccines fast. And they also have low cases and hospitalizations. And they're taking a different approach about opening at the moment versus waiting. But the point is, nothing can get you through a pandemic except immunity. Nothing. Mass distancing, ventilation, or what we call tools. This is the solution. And so the fastest way to get there is to administer vaccine fast. And so I applaud the president for getting out these vaccine supplies faster. I applaud any governor who has the supply to open it up to every person in their state as quickly as possible. Get those first doses in first, because it seems like first doses really work extremely well, and you can wait a little longer on the second dose. And then those states that are surging, if I were the United States government, I would literally surge supply of vaccines to those five states, New York, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Michigan and Florida, give them lots of vaccine supply, get first doses in first, and we're going to be able to quell some of those cases. That's how well these vaccines work.
To your point about immunity, NPR had a piece yesterday about herd immunity being at risk if too many people do not take the vaccine. And they interviewed a few public health experts who say that hesitancy and misinformation may stop the United States from reaching the goal of herd immunity. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I have been wary of surveys of people saying that they're vaccine hesitant before, in the middle of the biggest massive vaccination campaign in history. Once you see friends and family get vaccinated, once you see the safety of the vaccines, once you see, like you just said, that more than 160 million doses have been administered in this country, and we have had no death, no severe adverse effects from the vaccine, I do believe that hesitancy will get better among some who thought they went too fast. I also actually think that we have people still clamoring at the door to get their vaccine, and we sometimes overinflate that people don't want it because they really do want to go back to normal. So I am quite positive that we're going to get to the numbers that we need to achieve herd immunity. And what's that number? Actually, none of us know that number yet either, actually, and that's a very important point. It's likely to be between 60 and 70% given the trends that we're seeing in Israel. What I mean by that is you have to look at real world data in the world stage to say, hey, what's that point of herd immunity? You can't look at a model. You can't do a mathematical equation. You have to see what's going on. And what's going on is they have very low cases as they've rolled it out very quickly.
We're speaking with Dr. Monica Gandhi, professor of medicine and infectious disease specialist at UCSF, San Francisco General. And if you have any questions for Dr. Gandhi about the vaccine and these really incredible numbers, that the risk of getting COVID after being fully vaccinated is incredibly, incredibly low, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255, and then at about 40 after, we will answer your questions about logistics, what it will take to actually get an appointment if you haven't been able to get one just yet. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Is there any other good news you can share with us based on what we are still learning?
Yeah, I'd love to share one more piece of good news. You know, this is around vaccines stopping transmission. So the clinical trials were not designed to say, hey, do these vaccines stop transmission? Because we actually didn't swab people regularly in the clinical trials to see if they had asymptomatic infection in their nose. The design was, if you don't feel well, tell me, and I'm going to check and see if you have COVID. So the design was to look at symptomatic COVID. However, there have been now 7 studies, including one by the CDC that I mentioned before, the March 29th study, where there is asymptomatic swabbing going on of people after vaccination. And transmission, or even the possibility of getting it in your nose to pass it on to others, is reduced by 80 to 94% in about 8 studies, real-world studies around the world since the vaccine trials were released. So I do think, and it makes biological sense, that they also stop you from harboring it in your nose. That means it stops you from passing it on to others. There was a paper yesterday from Israel that showed us that even though only 16 and above have gotten the vaccine, of course, because the Pfizer is only approved for 16 and above, that adults getting the vaccine stops the spread to younger children less than 16. Mm-hmm. So all of that's good news for, quote, herd immunity. Herd immunity is the point that you stop the virus because you as a vaccinated person, it's hard for you to pass it on to others. It's also hard for you to get it. The virus is running around. It's trying to find someone to infect. It simply can't as we get more and more immunity in our population. And that's what stops and slows the cases.
Since you brought up children, those under 18 account for about 23% of the population, which is a huge chunk of the population. And a new clinical trial found that the Pfizer vaccine was extremely effective in young people ages 12 to 15. Moderna is also in the process of testing its vaccine on children. What are your thoughts on this? And what do you think about when we can expect kids to get vaccinated?
Yes, you're right that the Pfizer, so Pfizer's approved down to 16, Moderna's approved down to 18, and then the Pfizer trial that you just mentioned, we just have a press release that it looks extremely effective, sorry, efficacious, because that's the word for a clinical trial, in those between 12 and 15. In fact, there were 18 symptomatic cases of COVID in that trial, and they all occurred in people who got the salt shot, right, the placebo. So very effective, and importantly, very safe. And because of that safety and that efficacy, I do believe that it's probably going to get a quick emergency use authorization. Remember, it took from November 9th to December 14th in 2020 to go from the first press release of Pfizer to the emergency use authorization of FDA. It took 5 weeks. So I think we're going to get the Pfizer 12 to 15-year-old approval quite quickly in plenty of time for the fall. And then those who are 11 and under in the United States are 14.5% of our population. And that means that if 86.5% of us got the vaccine, that's way above the threshold we're estimating for herd immunity. So I actually think that with this 12 to 15-year-old approval, we may not need the little ones to get, certainly, as you say, the trial's ongoing for the little ones, but we may not need that requirement for the cases to profoundly go down to a low level, as they already are in California.
Dr. Monica Gandhi is a professor of medicine at UCSF San Francisco General. We've got a number of callers on the line, so let's hear from Mo in San Francisco. Hi, Mo. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you very much for this. So I have 2 questions. One is about the variant that's, I think, associated with Great Britain, that Walensky said is the cause of the most, the greatest cause of newly infected. Are you saying that if we're fully vaccinated, that 0.5% is protecting against this variant? And the other question...
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Mo, let's get Dr. Gandhi to answer that, and then you can ask your second question.
Sure,
go ahead, Dr. Gandhi.
Okay,
great. I'd love to answer that first question because the answer is a resounding yes. Now, what do I mean by that? On April 1st, Pfizer released the results of another vaccine effectiveness study that I forgot to tell you about, which was their 6-month data on 40,000 people around the world who had gotten the Pfizer vaccine. Plenty of people have been exposed to B.1.1.7, which is the UK variant. Plenty of people actually have been exposed to the South Africa variant, which is called the B1351. And it was equally effective against all those variants. The UK, as they were rolling out their vaccine, which was different vaccines, it just wasn't Pfizer, it was also AstraZeneca, had 90% of their virus being this B117. Israel, when they were rolling out their vaccine, had 80% of their virus being B117, and they still had profoundly low rates of cases after a very rapid rollout. So yes, this vaccine is going to work fine against the UK variant.
Oh, that's amazing news. Okay.
All of them.
I wish that Dr. Walensky would have added that into her alarming statistic.
You know, can I mention what I think is happening there?
Please.
I think that they're trying to do, I actually have thought of an analogy of this. They're trying to message optimism and caution at the same time, and it makes them appear super confusing. Because they're like, remember how Dr. Walensky said in the morning last Friday, you could travel when you're vaccinated, and in the afternoon she said you couldn't. I honestly think it's super hard. It makes you look like a weird kind of parent when you're messaging both optimism and caution at the same time, and it makes the messaging look confusing. So we're in a transition period with these vaccines, and it's making the public health messaging right now just give us all whiplash.
Mm. And Mo, did you have another question?
Well, just a quick one about the allowing in April 15th, you know, expanding the eligibility. I just remember when they did that, you know, when people 75 were allowed to do it, and then all of a sudden the eligibility thing went down to 65, and the phone lines were jammed with people who are now eligible. I'm just concerned about that happening again, and maybe people who really need it will be, you know, fall under that same sort of situation. So if you don't have the supply yet to vaccinate everyone.
Right.
Yes.
That's a great point.
I'd love to answer that as well. Please. And I do think the supply is going to meet the demand this time. I think, actually I was really trying to understand what happened at the beginning with our sluggish rollout. And these, what is called a lipid nanoparticle, this is a piece of fat that you put around the mRNA, was actually harder to make than we thought. And so by signing the National Biodefense Act when President Biden came in on January 20th, and then working with some companies, they were able to amplify the production of that lipid nanoparticle. And so now I truly believe we have the supply, and I don't think we're going to get into those miserable situations where poor people were trying to get on the website. They wanted to get a vaccine appointment. It wasn't happening. Okay, a lot of reputations are at stake of governors and presidents of saying that the supply is there, and I genuinely think the supply is there this time.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Thanks a lot, Rose.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mo. Great to hear from you. I hope you and your loved ones are doing well. And Dr. Gandhi, one more question on the strains, because they're getting, and the variants, they're getting so much attention. You tweeted a story from The Street called "Don't Believe the Hype About COVID Super Strains," says the top virologist, Vincent, is it Rossaniello? Can you tell us more about this, just given that this is getting so much media attention?
Yes, I actually would love to. So that was an important article. This is Dr. Ranicello, Vincent Ranicello at Columbia, and also Jay Levy here at UCSF. These are long-term virologists. These are people who thought about virology day in and day out for 40 years. Dr. Levy actually was one of the original discoverers of the HIV virus. And no, there's a lot of hype about the variants that I believe is maybe the media just can't believe their luck again, and so we're just doing some bad news stuff right now. No, I don't believe that we should be worrying about these variants to this degree. I think three reasons why, if I could quickly outline them. Number one, there's three things to worry about a variant. One is it more transmissible? Well, as I just told you, in this country, if you look at the map of where B117 is, it's for sure in Michigan we're having increasing cases, but it's also in California more than in any other state. And we're not seeing increasing cases. So the pure out epidemiology doesn't look like it's really associated with where B117 is. And as I told you, Israel and the UK had 80 and 90% of the B117 variant respectively, but by just being calm, rolling out their vaccine, they got on top of their cases and everything went down. Second is, okay, is it more virulent? Well, you know, you can look at a lab study that says it's sticks better to a cell in the nose or a cell in the what's called the respiratory epithelium. And there have been some studies that show that with B117. But again, you have large-scale epidemiology playing out in the real world that's accessible at all of our fingertips. Let's look at a simple measure. Are we seeing more hospitalizations per case in places that have high levels of B117? So what I mean by that is take 20 cases in front of you. Where they're all B117, are we getting 5 people hospitalized? Whereas if it was the ancestral strain, for in 20 cases, are we seeing 1% being hospitalized? And no, the, quote, hospitalization per case rate has not increased in places with B117. And then the third question, which would be a disaster, is are our vaccines going to evade the immune response? Are variants going to be able to break the immune response that we got from our vaccines? And there's no evidence about that. In fact, Doctor, that's, I think, what led to that street article by a virologist that was really irritated by that comment because that can really scare people. There are two levels of immunity, antibodies and T cells, both of them, but especially the T cells, which are an enduring way to get immunity. When you get T cells rising with your vaccine, they work beautifully against all the variants, all of them. So, no, I think it's hype. I think it's fear. I think it's fear-mongering. I think it's scaring. And it's understandable. We just can't believe that. This is what I would advise if I were any public health official. Keep calm. Figure out how to get the vaccines in fast as arms as possible. That's your only job.
Mm. Well, we will link to that article at yourcallradio.org.
Great.
Today, we're joined by Dr. Monica Gandhi, Professor of Medicine at UCSF San Francisco General. Let's go next to Katie in Mill Valley. Hi, Katie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. My question is, are death rates plummeting as a result of the increasing vaccination? And if that's so, why don't we see more media publicity about this? I think that the media has felt responsible to be alarmist, and at some points it was really important to be alarmist, but now we don't really need to be so alarmist. But am I right? Are the death rates plummeting because people are getting vaccinated? I still have many friends who are vaccinated. They're still terrified to be around other people, and I very much appreciate the show because it helps people understand better.
Thank you. Dr. Gandhi?
Yes. So death rates are plummeting because of the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So what do I mean by that? Every single vaccine, no matter where you are, will take away severe disease. 100% that they prevent COVID-19 hospitalizations and deaths. So as we're rolling out vaccine in places that are doing well with rollout of vaccine, which would be Israel, the U.S. and the U.K., those are the three top countries. UAE is also doing extremely well. We are seeing plummeting death rates. You know, my word I use is what vaccines do is they, quote, defang the virus. They take away its teeth. They make it into if you get it, more of a cold. And so, yes, death rates are plummeting. That is the best part of it. We have in the state of California 6 hospitalizations per 100,000 people of COVID-19. That is a rate that is about 3 to 5 times lower than we see with influenza during a typical winter, not this winter, but a typical winter, because influenza causes 20 to 40 hospitalizations over 100,000 people. So we are far and below now because of the vaccine. COVID-19 has been defanged, seeing very low rates of hospitalizations among those vaccinated. Of course, people who are getting into the hospital right now are those, sadly, who have not yet had the ability to get the vaccine, and a plummeting death rate because it was those who were older that were more likely to die of COVID, unfortunately, and they got prioritized for vaccines first. So, yes, if I were a media outlet, would I make on my front page the word death rates plummeting from COVID-19 vaccination? I would put that every day in my media outlet.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this? Why are we scaring people? It's a complicated question. It has to do, again, with this idea that the CDC director wants people to stay away from each other, at least in these 5 states where the cases are going up. So she's trying to message caution and optimism at the same time, and it makes someone really confusing. My analogy is I actually have a very specific analogy. once you're vaccinated, you're very safe. Once a teenager gets their license and they've proven their worth, they can actually drive. But you know how many parents say to their teenager, of course you can drive. Of course you can have the keys to the car. You're probably going to die because you're a horrible driver, and I'm scared, and I don't want you to go out driving yet. But and there's a profound mixed messaging that occurs. So I think we're just in the point of mixed messaging at this moment.
Right, because I just searched and there's not one headline that's talking about, and I did this on a Google search, so it is limited, but there's not one headline that says the death rate is plummeting in the United States. We just have a related email from Louise who says, I checked the coronavirus daily tracker in the East Bay Times and see that Michigan had just over 6,100 new cases, but 61 deaths. Florida has over 5,500 new cases, but 70 deaths. I realize that death rates are lagging indicators, but could it be that the UK variant widely circulating now is more contagious, but not yet very deadly? And what will be the, what might be implications of this for future risk assessment?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually did an analysis with a biostatistician that I haven't published, but just it's a very simple analysis I put on Twitter, which is exactly what you just asked. Is the hospitalization per case rate going up in with the B.1.1.7 variant, or is the death per case rate going up? And in fact, it's not going up at all. So I don't actually believe that these viruses are more virulent. Where that comment is coming from is laboratory studies where they stick more in a lab study to say a cell in cell culture that looks like your respiratory epithelium, but they're not, again, not playing out in the world stage. We all have access to this data. The CDC actually releases it every day to all of us. And luckily, in these places where there's a lot of B.1.1.7, the death rate is still low when we've been vaccinating, and so is the hospitalization per case rate is unchanged than it was when we had the ancestral strain being more circulating. So this virulence question doesn't seem to be playing out in epidemiologic data. And there is so much good news about these vaccines in Florida and Michigan. It is those who's getting hospitalized. It's those who haven't gotten the vaccine yet. Let's surge vaccine to those states. Let's actually get one dose in everyone's arm first and wait a bit, wait 6 to 8 or even 12 weeks for the second dose so we can get people immunity faster. That's what I would do instead of talking about the fact that people are getting hospitalized who've had the vaccine, because that isn't true. So, of course, whoever's dying and getting hospitalized are those who haven't had the vaccine. We have the solution to this pandemic. It's a matter of getting the vaccine out faster, and that's what I would be spending all my time on if I were in charge of government.
Well, thank you for the call, Katie. Great point. Let's go next to Kimmy in Berkeley. Hi, Kimmy. Welcome to the show. Uh-oh.
Let me turn down the radio. Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm probably an odd case. I'm 80 years old, and I drugs have always worked in a reverse, like drugs, children taking drugs. They said a while ago, and drugs have always worked in reverse for me. For that reason, I'm not taking the vaccine, and I don't recommend that to everybody. But a question I have, I've been following all these reports, radio, TV, online, and what they still, given that all these vaccines are only a year old, they still do not know, and that's another reason I hesitate for myself, they do not know what the long-range effects of these drugs are or these vaccines are. So I'm just wondering...
Yes, Kimmy, thank you for the question. I think we've all thought about this, Dr. Gandhi, long-term effects of these vaccinations.
Yes, I think it's a really fair question. And I would, you know, the only way that we can get people who don't, like our caller, who don't want to take the vaccine, to get them vaccinated is to give education and give them some reassurance about the vaccine. So let me address the two things that just got said. Do we know the long-term effects of these vaccines? Well, we don't, of course. They've only been around for a very short period of time. But on the other hand, the biological mechanism of them gives no indication that they are going to give us any long-term effects. There are a few vaccines in the world, in history, that very many years later could give a long-term effect. But those were all live vaccines where a virus was taken it was made what's called live attenuated in the lab. They made it less virulent, and then they injected it in people. And then many years later, we could see some terrible side effects. That's not at all what this vaccine is. It's what's called just a piece of genetic material called mRNA, or DNA in the case of the Johnson & Johnson. It goes in your body. Your body produces the protein from that RNA, mRNA or DNA, and then that mRNA or DNA just goes away. It totally degrades. It can't go anywhere in your body. It can't go inside your cells. It can't stay around. So it will go away, what was in the vaccine, and it can't cause long-term side effects. So I'm very, very comfortable, if I think about the mechanism of how these work, that they're not going to cause long-term side effects. And the second concern that the caller had raised is, you know, that having side effects to other medications, or, you know, being more sensitive to therapeutics or vaccines in the past. These are profoundly safe vaccines. And what I mean by that is we gave it out to people in clinical trials. About 130,000 people got it overall in all these different vaccines in the clinical trials. So let's not even think about the clinical trials. We've been giving out these vaccines on a mass vaccination scale in droves. Hundreds of millions of people have received these vaccines. And luckily, no one has, luckily and thankfully, no one has had severe adverse effects, no deaths from these vaccines, no severe adverse effects, things that we can manage. And that's why I feel comfortable recommending this to my patients. They're so safe. And so I do understand. And not everyone has to take the vaccine. Take your time in making the decision. These vaccines are going to be around. Take your time. Watch your friends. You know, see how safe they are. Take your time. Please don't ever feel pressured to take these vaccines. But I'm very convinced how safe and effective they are.
Well, thank you for the call, Kimmy. A little bit more good news. CNBC reports that Survivor Corps, a patient advocacy group for long haulers, surveyed 900 people and found that 41% reported some relief, a slight relief to full recovery shortly after getting a vaccination.
Yes. So this is the other, you know, aspect about these vaccines. They're almost too good to be true. I really do believe that. And I look at this data day in and day out. So I really want to reassure people that I feel like I'm coming from a position that I've really looked at this data. They also, in people who have these longer symptoms after having COVID, which is usually people who came to medical attention with COVID. So usually people who are symptomatic with COVID, if there's residual, what we call dysregulated inflammation, because you still have some inflammation going on after a COVID episode, it seems what these vaccines do is change that yucky, bad immune response to a regulated, adaptive immune response so that you can fight those symptoms better. And there's some biological plausibility. And so what you just said was very good news, that people who have residual symptoms from COVID, there's a lot of evidence now that if you get a vaccine, that those symptoms attenuate. And I just had a patient of mine who was having symptoms of feeling unwell after having COVID, and I gave her the vaccine and she's feeling better. So I've seen this in my own practice.
What do we know at this point about immunity and how long these vaccines will last?
You know, I think that's another thing where that's kind of this bad news bears is winning the day. There's a lot of stories out there that say, oh, we're going to need boosters all the time and it's not going to last for very long. I don't believe that biologically. Mm-hmm. Why? Because coronaviruses are very different than influenza viruses. Influenza virus, as you all know, is the only vaccine that we need yearly. We don't need measles yearly. We don't need other RNA virus boosters yearly. Why? Because influenza has what we call a very leaky polymerase. What I mean by that is that it can mutate very quickly. It's just what the influenza virus does. It's an entirely different RNA virus than the coronavirus. The coronavirus, which is what SARS-CoV-2 is, the COVID virus, has a very, what we call, fastidious proofreading mechanism. It doesn't like to mutate. It doesn't like to make copies of itself that mutate. Of course, we've heard a lot about variants, but that's because we had a lot of transmission going on. It's not going to mutate crazily like influenza virus does. So once you get your vaccine, I do think that your immunity is going to be long-lasting. The other piece of evidence that goes along that is we have two other coronaviruses that look just like COVID that we can look to in the past. We had this terrible coronavirus called SARS that caused a pandemic in 2003. That's the closest cousin to COVID. A cold-like virus, the coronavirus is not a close cousin to SARS-CoV-2. A close cousin is the one that caused terrible disease in 2003 called SARS. And those people who have recovered from SARS still have immunity 17 years and counting, because it was 2003 when they got it. And they looked at their T cells under the microscope, and they still have long-lasting T cells 17 years later. So I do think immunity is going to be long-lasting from these vaccines. One other piece of evidence, if I have time, but I think, do you want me to give that other piece of evidence?
Please, yes.
Oh, yeah. So something called memory B cells. Memory B cells are my friend. These are amazing. Okay. So what memory B cells are these are after you get a vaccine or you get natural infection, there's a type of immune response called memory B cells. You produce B cells, and then they go into your lymph nodes, and they hang out there for decades. So there was a study about a month ago that after mRNA vaccine, they actually biopsied lymph nodes of people, and they saw that they already quickly after an mRNA vaccine in those lymph nodes were forming pools of memory B cells. So you form memory B cells. Then add another study to it. There's a study from Nature about the influenza 1918 pandemic. They took people who 90 years later, after they had been exposed to the 1918 influenza, when they were about anywhere between 3 and 12 years old, they took them 90 years later. So how old were they? Yes, they were between 91 and 104 years old. And they looked at their memory B cells that they had developed after getting influenza 90 years earlier. And those memory B cells, once you expose them in the laboratory to the influenza virus from 1918, they were able to produce very strong neutralizing antibodies against that original 1918 strain of influenza. So if we form memory B cells to these vaccines, which I just told you that we did because they took some people and actually biopsied their lymph nodes and told us that they form memory B cells, and memory B cells go out to 90 to 100 years, as I just told you from the other study, I think we're going to have long-lived immunity to coronavirus.
Wow. Well, that's really amazing news. Dr. Gandhi, thank you so much for the information, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Dr. Monica Gandhi is professor of medicine and an infectious disease specialist at UCSF San Francisco General Hospital. We're getting a lot of emails about what is happening overseas. We all know that until everyone has a vaccine around the world, we will not get through this. We didn't have time to go there today, but we definitely will do another show on this. A number of questions about what's happening in the West Bank and Gaza. And I just found a tweet from Dr. Yara Hawari, who's a Palestinian academic. She writes, as of March 30th, 0.16% of the Palestinian population have received both doses. Over 50% of Israel's population have received both doses. So we'll definitely do a show about that. Channel 4 News also has a piece about how Brazil is really dealing with so many deaths right now. Jair Bolsonaro is being blamed for the deadliest episode of the pandemic yet. And we will put a link at yourcallradio.org. This is a very important piece of the story, and we'll be sure to cover it in the coming weeks. Coming up after a short break, we will take your questions about how to actually get a vaccine if you are still having problems. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to talk about getting more vaccines in people's arms here in California. All Californians over 16 will be eligible to be vaccinated April 15th, which is actually, yeah, April 15th, which is next Thursday. So if you have any questions, if you have not been able to get an appointment, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. Or if you have any questions specifically about California, you can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And joining us is Anna Maria Berry Jester, senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News and California Healthline. Thanks again for joining us, Anna Maria.
Hi, Rose.
Well, it's great to have you back. It's just really amazing to hear about the efficacy rates with these vaccines. We have more good news. California has administered more than 21 million doses, and the state now has the lowest positivity rate in the country.
Yeah, the trajectory of cases is really good in California, even as there are other states that are seeing an uptick in cases. So that from the experts I've been talking to, they feel really hopeful and happy for California, and also are wanting people to sort of be a little bit cautious and careful and not go too crazy just yet so that we don't end up in a position where the cases start going up.
All Californians over 16 will be eligible starting next Thursday. And Mo had a good question earlier. What will happen, do you think? Because we saw what happened when those over 50 got access. People couldn't get appointments. So is the state ready for this next wave?
Yeah, there's an increase in the supply of vaccines every week. And there will be an increase, but definitely not everyone's going to be able to get a dose on April 15th when things open up. You know, 45% of people 18 and up have had at least one dose in California. So there are a lot of people in that 16 to 49 age bracket who have been vaccinated for one reason or another. It's not every single person, but there are going to be just a lot more people than supply is available. So the public health experts and health officials are asking people to really please be patient and, you know, saying that this is going to have to happen over a couple of months, not a couple of days, but that the time will come soon for everyone.
Do you have any new tips or resources to share for getting a vaccine appointment?
I don't know that I have any new tips. I do think that just some of the stuff that has been going on the whole time is still really important. So, you know, there's MyTurn, which is the state site where you can go get vaccine appointments, but counties are still really enrolling in that, and that all the vaccine appointments are not available there. Additionally, the pharmacies that have appointments, and they have a lot of appointments, and they get a vaccine supply directly from the federal government. You have to kind of look at those places individually. So that's Safeway and Rite Aid and Walgreens and CVS. All of those, it's great to try and check a bunch of different sites, but there's still vaccinefinder.org, which can help figure out where there are vaccines available in your community. In addition to looking at MyTurn, which will have sort of the state and county run sites.
Vice President Kamala Harris visited Oakland this week and said she's trying to help keep one of the FEMA mass vaccination sites at the Oakland Coliseum open. FEMA only agreed to keep these sites open for 2 months. The other mass site is in Los Angeles at Cal State. Do you have any updates on these?
Yeah, my understanding is there was an agreement between two counties. I think it's Alameda, and I'm trying to remember if it's Contra Costa, forgive me, but that they are going to keep that open for at least several more weeks.
Great.
And there are still, I just looked, and there are appointments available there right now.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for that. Let's hear from Matt in Burlingame. Hi, Matt. Welcome to the show. Hi, do we have Matt? Oh, I think we dropped Matt. Well, if you have a question about what it's like to get a vaccine, any questions, if you're having any problems or any questions about what's going on specifically in California, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have some other big news. This week, Governor Newsom announced that if everything goes as planned with meeting vaccination goals and if cases remain low in California, the state will reopen on June 15th. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so we've been using this color-coded tier system in California for many months now that sort of says, you know, what businesses can be open and what activities we can do. And the governor announced that so long as the vaccine supply remains stable and we continue towards vaccination goals and that hospitalizations remain low, then that system is just going to go away entirely on June 15th. mask mandates will still be in place, and they say they'll have, you know, common sense guidelines and regulations around social distancing and, you know, how many people can be in businesses, that kind of thing. But it is a pretty dramatic shift if all goes well. There's been some concerns about this. You know, we are seeing these big upticks in cases in Michigan, Pennsylvania, several other states. And so I think some experts are concerned that we could see an uptick in cases, and this might be a little bit early of an announcement. But other people are pointing out, you know, that the state is doing really well. Vaccinations are charging ahead. There's so few cases, and it's helpful for people to have these early announcements so that they can plan in advance. You know, schools and other businesses can figure out how to operate going forward.
Last time we had you on, well, almost every time we've had you on, we've talked about vaccine equity. And in late March, a new report came out that found California is among the worst states on COVID vaccine equity, according to the CDC. And we haven't been able to find any updates since then. Do you have any you can share with us?
Yeah, there are different ways to measure this. And I don't believe I know of an update from the CDC, but the way the state is looking at it is they use this Healthy Places Index that we've talked about, where they look at communities who are sort of least advantaged and most advantaged and break them up into groups. And early on, there were way more vaccines in the healthiest, most advantaged communities, and way fewer vaccines in the communities that are sort of more disadvantaged. And they have been closing that gap according to their data. So they think they're making progress on that. That said, when you look at some of the state data on race and ethnicity, there are still pretty big discrepancies between, you know, the share of Californians who are Black and the share of Californians who are vaccinated by race and ethnicity. It's I think there's still definitely some disparities there to work through.
Okay. And I'm sure that we'll get a lot more updates in the coming months when there's more data available.
Yeah, it's tricky because, you know, there's so many ways people can be disadvantaged. There's, you know, rural communities where it's just harder to get to a vaccine site, although in some rural communities they have an excess of vaccines right now because there's so much hesitancy. There's racial disparities. There's economic disparities. Some people, it's really hard to just, you know, go to appointments. I've talked to several people this week who are undocumented, and it's interesting. They felt really strongly the only place they were comfortable going was their community health clinic. So even though there were appointments available at some of these big drive-up sites, that really wasn't an option for them. And then there are other people, you know, the appointments, when they become available, it's usually in the next day or two. And for people who are working, that can be a little tricky to make an appointment and find the time, you know, if you're working on an hourly wage and maybe can't take time off from your job.
Let's talk about elders. Your colleague Jenny Gold wrote a piece yesterday called California Counties, a Hodgepodge of Highs and Lows in Vaccinating Vulnerable Seniors. According to the CDC, more than 75% of all seniors in the U.S. have received at least one dose. But here in California, that number is 56%. What are you hearing from public health officials on that?
Yeah, so it's 80% of seniors in California have received at least one dose. 56% are fully vaccinated. The tricky part here, though, is that there's just huge disparities between counties. So there are some counties like Marin where, you know, above the national average have been vaccinated of seniors. You've got over 70% fully vaccinated. There are other counties where it's, you know, less than 50%. And the thing we're hearing, there are different reasons for that. There are some counties where there's a lot of hesitancy and just has not been successful efforts yet to sort of reach out to people and you know, help them understand, you know, work through whatever concerns they might have and that sort of thing. There are other counties that really just don't have the resources. So, and sometimes those are the same counties and, you know, are not able to kind of get out to people and meet them where they're at. And then there are other counties that are just having huge success. And everyone that Jenny and I have talked to about that, it's has said, you know, there's definitely an issue of privilege here. The wealthier, whiter communities have had greater success getting people vaccinated. And they, you know, think that that just shows this disparities in access to information and access to resources and that kind of thing.
Hmm. We talked earlier with Dr. Gandhi about vaccine hesitancy. And Jenny also reports that there is hesitancy in California's more conservative regions. They're mm-hmm. struggling to give away available doses, while more progressive areas have far more demand than supply. And she notes that counties that overwhelmingly voted for Trump are vaccinating at much lower rates.
That's right. I mean, part of what's interesting, though, is a lot of those health officials have said they think that some of this is hesitancy, not refusal. And that's something that a lot of people are trying to differentiate. There are people who say they will not be vaccinated, but there are a lot of people who don't want to be vaccinated yet, want to know more, maybe are just dragging their feet, maybe, you know, have questions that are unanswered. And, you know, people get their information from different places. And unfortunately, a lot of that is done, you know, our political divisions determine sort of how we get information at this point. And so there is some differences in how people, what people are learning about the vaccine, what they know, what questions they might have answered. And there's really big political differences in California in terms of who is getting vaccinated. And you do see a real red-blue split there. But a lot of the health officials think that they can overcome some of that if they have more time and more resources to help people understand the vaccines and how safe they are and what benefits they bring.
Right. It seems like people who might be hesitant will see their neighbors, family members, and people in their community getting it, and then they'll be more open to it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Is there any other news that stood out for you that we should know about in California on vaccines?
You know, the supply is still going up, and that seems great. You know, there's sort of two tails going on at the same time. On the one hand, it's when you really think about, we just started vaccine rollout a little over three months ago, and 45% of people 18 and up in this state have one dose. That's really mm-hmm. incredible. On the other hand, like we said, there are these pockets of places where some of the most vulnerable, some of the people whom we most need to have that get the vaccine, haven't gotten it yet. And, you know, herd immunity is this idea that we need a lion's share of the population to have either been vaccinated or have had the virus in order to make it safe for us all to sort of move around in ways with less restrictions. And it's unclear, I think, whether, you know, how hesitancy and some of these disparities will play out in the coming months, but there's still a lot of hope.
Anna Maria Berry-Jester is senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News and California Healthline. As always, Anna Maria, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. And again, please spread the word. All Californians over 16 will be eligible to get vaccinated in California starting next Thursday. And we will continue doing shows about the rollout and all the new science that we are learning about the vaccine. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Joanne Marr for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.